The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Century, Racism and the Drug War. The International Independent Expert Mechanism to Advance Racial Justice and Equality in the Context of Law Enforcement met for its fifth session, March 24th and 25th, at the UN in New York. They held 2 days of public in-person consultations on systemic racism against Africans and people of African descent in the enforcement of drug laws and policies. On today's show, we're going to hear some highlights from day one. Let's start by hearing more about the expert mechanism and its mandate. From her opening remarks, here's Dr. Tracy Kazee, one of the co-moderators at this session and an expert mechanism expert.
As a brief reminder, the mandate of the expert mechanism on racial justice and equality in law enforcement, IMLR, so you'll hear us say that short because it's a mouthful, was established by the Human Rights Council Resolution 4721 and 5613, requires the mechanism to engage in consultations with states, directly affected individuals and communities, and other stakeholders on the issues within its scope. These consultations ensure that IMLR's work remains grounded in the lived experiences of Africans and people of African descent, as well as in the rigorous research and multidisciplinary expertise that we have here and in the room. Since its establishment, IMLR's thematic reports have examined key areas of concern. They need for disaggregated data with regards to interactions of Africans and people of African descent with law enforcement authorities and the criminal justice system. That was a report of 2022. Reimagining policing and addressing trust deficits. That's our 2023 report. Access to justice and accountability for excessive use of force and other human rights violations by law enforcement. That's our 2024 report. And systemic racism with criminal justice system in 2025. The themes reflect the mechanism's ongoing commitment to addressing structural and institutional racism across law enforcement and justice systems. Building on this foundation, this year the mechanism has chosen to focus on the intersection of drug laws and policy enforcement and systemic racism affecting those of African and African descent. This theme is deeply anchored in our mandate. So indeed, the disproportionate and discriminatory impacts of drug policies on Africans and people of African descent have been a reoccurring concern throughout IMLR's work. Across regions, we have documented patterns of racial profiling, disproportionate stops and searches, unlawful use of force, extrajudicial killings, disparate arrest and incarceration, and harsher sentencing. Many rooted in the heavy-handed approaches associated with the so-called war on drugs. These findings have emerged consistently in our thematic reports, country assessments, and the individual communications addressed by the mechanisms. There are several reasons why we believe this issue merits a deeper examination. Many UN human rights mechanisms have highlighted that punitive drug control approaches often are counterproductive, undermining health, dignity, and life, particularly for those individuals and communities facing structural discrimination. These concerns are echoed in the UN Common Position on Drug-Related Matters, which emphasizes the need for evidence-based, rights-centered, and public health-oriented drug policies. Despite clear evidence of the disproportionate racial impacts across regions, no UN human rights report has yet examined this issue comprehensively. This expert mechanism is therefore uniquely positioned to fill the gap by building on its own findings and generating concrete, actionable recommendations. Over the next 2 days, our consultation will follow the structural set out in the program of work, with each session anchored by a panel of experts and followed by an open exchange with all participants. We begin with session one, which will examine the impacts of drug policing on Africans and people of African descent, looking at racial profiling, surveillance, stop and search practices, militarized operations, and how intersectional factors compound the harms and the first point of contact with law enforcement. Session two turns to the role of drug laws and systemic racism across the criminal justice system, exploring disproportionate detention and sentencing outcomes, disparities in legal processes, the application of severe penalties, and the long-term social and economic impact on individual families and communities. Later in the day, session three addresses key human rights impacts with a focus on health harms, barriers to harm reduction and treatment services, exposure to violence and trauma, community-level impacts, and gender-specific experiences of harm, particularly for women of African descent. On the second day, we continue with session four, which investigates structural, historical, and institutional drivers of racial discrimination and drug enforcement, including the legacies of enslavement and colonialism, racialized narratives surrounding drugs, global drug control frameworks, policing cultures, stereotypes, stigma, and the structural inequities that shape discriminatory outcomes. We conclude with session five, which focuses on drug policy reform and transformative solutions, examining promising practices, institutional reforms needed to prevent discrimination, accountability and oversight models, reparations and redress, and the central role that Africans and people of African descent must play in designing and monitoring rights-based drug policy alternatives. Across all sections, we look forward to a vibrant, inclusive engagement from all participants, highlighting perspectives from different regions and contexts. The findings emerging from our dialogue will directly inform IMLR's next report to be presented to the Human Rights Council and the General Assembly later this year. To ensure that the report is as robust and representative as possible, we strongly encourage all participants to engage actively in our discussions and to contribute in writing. IMLR has launched a public call for inputs, and your submissions will be essential to the shaping of our analysis and recommendations. These discussions will also guide our future work, including our interactions with other UN processes, such as the Office on Drug and Crime and the Commissions on Narcotic Drugs. We thank you once again for your participation, and we look forward to the rich discussions that will lie ahead.
That was Dr. Tracy Kazee, expert and co-moderator of the fifth session of the International Independent Expert Mechanism to Advance Racial Justice and Equality in the Context of Law Enforcement. The first discussion on day one was entitled Impacts of Drug Policing on Africans and People of African Descent. Let's start our coverage with the presentation by Trevor Vellenor, the retired commissioner of the U.S. Virgin Islands Police Department and a board member of the Law Enforcement Action Partnership.
The great Robert Nesta Marley, Bob Marley, reggae icon, he indicated that this morning I woke up in a curfew. Oh God, I was a prisoner too. Could not recognize the faces standing over me, all dressed in uniform of brutality. How many rivers do we have to cross before we can talk to the boss? All we got, it seems we have lost. We must have really paid the cost. I put that in the framework of what we're discussing today, in the sense of what does this represent? It represents freedom, the quest for freedom, fairness, parity. And so I start my testimony by referencing Robert Nesta Marley. Advancing racial justice and equality in law enforcement, particularly as it relates to people of African descent, requires more than policy revision. It demands a transformation in culture, accountability, and community engagement. At the center of this transformation is procedural justice, a framework that emphasizes fairness in process, transparency in decision-making, impartiality, and the preservation of dignity and voice. When law enforcement agents operate through a procedural justice lens, they not only improve outcomes, but also rebuild legitimacy in communities historically impacted by discrimination, over-policing, and systemic inequities. Procedural justice is grounded in four essential principles: voice, neutrality, respect, trustworthiness. Individuals must be given the opportunity to express their perspectives during encounters with law enforcement. Officers must interact and demonstrate unbiased decision-making rooted in facts rather than stereotype. interactions must preserve human dignity regardless of circumstances. And importantly, law enforcement actions must reflect sincere concerns for the well-being of the community. For people of African descent, procedural justice is foundational to restoring trust in a system that has historically and disproportionately subjected African Americans and people of African descent to aggressive policing, racial profiling, unequal enforcement, and not to exclude unfair and extended imprisonment. A point of reference would be back in the 1980s, the surge in violence, inner city violence, coupled with the media coverage and hysteria around crack epidemic in the United States. Federal lawmakers passed draconian laws resulting in harsher sentences that were 100 times greater for crack cocaine than for powder cocaine. Even though the substances are not fundamentally different, the sentences were. The sentencing disparity resulted in African American being sentenced to incredibly lengthy terms of imprisonment compared to their white counterparts who engage in powder cocaine use and sales. Although it required powder cocaine to make crack cocaine, the sentence difference again was 100 times greater for crack cocaine than for powder cocaine. Put in perspective, possession of 5 grams of crack cocaine yielded a 5-year federal sentence. 5 grams. While 500 grams of powder cocaine was required for a similar sentence. As we discussed, black inner city youths were using and selling crack cocaine. White folks tend to gravitate towards powder cocaine. Those cases oftentimes were not prosecuted. In 1986, before the enactment of the federal mandatory minimum sentence for crack cocaine offenses, the average federal drug sentence for African American was 11% higher than for whites. By 1990, 4 years later, the average federal sentence for African American was 49% higher than their white counterparts. Currently, African Americans make up 13% of the United States population, but we constitute 37% of the inmate population. While the crack cocaine versus powder cocaine sentencing disparity was reduced from 100 to 1 to 18 to 1 in 2010, there remains a significant disparity. The 2015 President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing underscored that building trust and legitimacy is the first pillar of effective policing in the modern era. Trust is not achieved through rhetoric. It is cultivated through consistent behavior that reflects fairness and accountability, particularly in communities where people of African descent are the minority. Policing is viewed as a threat, as over-policing is the prevailing assessment. While others may see law enforcement as a service, people of color are more likely to experience over-policing, setting up the perception that officers are not present to help, often seeing policing as threat to their freedom. To regain the trust of these community, law enforcement must acknowledge historical harm, engage in open dialogue with community stakeholders, and adopt transparent data practices that illuminates disparity in stops, arrests, and use of force incidents. Trust building also requires investment in community-oriented police models where officers serve as partners rather than occupiers, collaborating with residents to identify and address concerns. A key component of advancing racial equity involves reforming drug policy and a broader criminal justice framework. For decades, punitive drug enforcement strategies have disproportionately harmed community of African descent. Mandatory minimum sentences, aggressive stop and frisk tactics, and the criminalization of substance use have fueled mass incarceration without delivering sustainable public safety outcomes. These approaches have often fractured families, limited economic mobility, and eroded trust in the legal system, along with eroding that trust in political folks. Organizations such as Law Enforcement Action Partnership, LEAP, and the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, NOBLE, have been instrumental in reframing this conversation. LEAP advocates for evidence-based drug policy and criminal justice reform grounded in public health principle, not punishment. Drawing on the lived experiences of law enforcement professionals, LEAP highlights that arrests and incarceration are often ineffective responses to substance use and low-level offenses. Instead, LEAP supports alternatives that reduce harms, improve safety, and promote human dignity. Promoting alternative to arrest and incarceration is central to procedural justice and racial equity. Diversion programs, restorative justice initiative, crisis intervention teams, and community-based treatment options can address root causes of behavior while reducing unnecessary contact with the criminal justice system. When officers are empowered to refer individuals to social services rather than jail, communities benefit from reduced recidivism, lower incarceration costs, and strong family stability. These approaches recognize that public safety is strengthened not by the volume of arrests, but by the health and resilience of the community. Additionally, procedural justice calls for robust training and implicit bias, cultural competency, and de-escalation. Officers must understand the historical context that shapes perceptions within communities of African descent. This awareness fosters empathy and improves communication, reducing the likelihood of escalation during encounters. Equally important is accountability, transparent disciplinary process, independent investigation of critical incidents, and accessible complaint mechanisms signal that no one is above the law. Building trust also requires shared responsibility. Community advisory boards, youth engagement initiative, and collaborative problem-solving forums provide structured opportunities for dialogue. When law enforcement leaders commit to actively listening and responding to community concerns, legitimacy grows. Data transparency, particularly regarding racial disparity, further reinforces credibility. Agencies that openly publish data on stops, searches, arrests, and use of force demonstrate that they have nothing to hide and are willing to engage and demonstrate a commitment to self-examination and reform. Advancing racial justice within law enforcement is not anti-police. It is pro-community and pro-safety. Research consistently demonstrates that when communities perceive law enforcement as fair and legitimate, they are more likely to cooperate with investigations, report crimes, and comply with the law. Procedural justice thus becomes a force multiplier for effective policing. Ultimately, advancing racial justice and equality for people of African descent requires aligning policy, practice, and culture with the principle of fairness and humanity. Embracing the 21st century policing pillar of trust building and advancing drug policy and alternatives to incarceration creates a pathway to safer communities. By shifting from punitive approaches to restorative, evidence-based strategies, law enforcement can fulfill its calling to protect and serve people with dignity, equity, and justice.
That was Trevor Vellinor, the retired commissioner of the U.S. Virgin Islands Police Department and a board member of the Law Enforcement Action Partnership, speaking March 24th on a panel entitled Impacts of Drug Policing on Africans and People of African Descent, from day one of the fifth session of EMLR, the UN's International Independent Expert Mechanism to Advance Racial Justice and Equality in the Context of Law Enforcement. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The second discussion on day one of EMLR's fifth session was entitled The Role of Drug Laws in Systemic Racism Against Africans and People of African Descent at All Stages of the Criminal Justice System. One of the presenters in that discussion was Ajeng Lorasetti, Human Rights Lead at Harm Reduction International.
We often hear from the proponents of punitive approach to drugs that imply or present drug laws and policies as neutral tools designed to protect public safety. And we've heard from the speakers this morning as well about the fact that drug policies is never neutral and it's not a neutral tools. One of the clearest manifestations of this is the overrepresentation of Africans and people of African descent in detention and prison populations for drug offenses all over the world. Across different regions, the pattern is strikingly consistent. We have heard from Cassandra this morning on the situation in the US. I'm sure we will hear from Niamh later on the UK situation. And HRI's monitoring indicates that at least 460 South Africans are detained in overseas prisons, for example, either post-conviction or awaiting trials, with 52 of them held specifically for drug crimes. Most of them were apprehended as low-level careers within the drug trade hierarchy. And our documentation also showed an estimated 1,300 Kenyans serving sentences in foreign prisons, with significant share of women, many of whom are on death row for drug crimes. And reports identify poverty and other vulnerabilities as factors for women engaging in drug trade. So this overrepresentation is not simply a matter of policing. It actually reflects systemic bias embedded across institutions. And conditions of detentions actually further deepens these inequalities, with overcrowding, limited access to healthcare, and heightened exposure to infectious diseases such as HIV and tuberculosis. And prisons are high-risk environments, yet harm reduction is often absent. And worse, health risks are ignored when they affect people of African descent. And there is a report from a UN working group that actually highlights this. And I can share that in details on our submissions to the MLAIR later. But discrimination doesn't stop at arrest, and it actually intensifies and accumulates throughout the criminal justice process. And there is clear evidence of disparities in charging decisions, including the use of harsher charges or aggravating actors. In some contexts, especially in my country, being a foreign national can itself be treated as aggravating circumstances. In one documented case, where one of my latest clients, a court explicitly relied on racial stereotypes to justify a death sentence by stating that black Nigerians are often involved in drug trafficking in Indonesia. And the disproportionate use of death penalty represents one of the most extreme consequences of these dynamics. As of 2023, 36 countries and territories retain the death penalty for drug offenses in violations of international standards. Most retentionist countries for drugs are in Asia and the MENA region, the Middle East and North African region. And due to the nature of both the drug market and drug law enforcement, foreign nationals are disproportionately impacted by this form of punishment. HRI's report, The Death Penalty for Drug Offenses, Global Overview, documented that in both 2024 and 2025, roughly 20% of all known drug-related executions were against foreign nationals. In Saudi Arabia, for example, of the 240 people executed for drug offenses in 2025, 39 were from Somalia, 35 from Ethiopia, 22 from Egypt, 11 from Jordan, 10 from Nigeria, and 4 from Sudan. And similar figures also documented in 2024. 2025 also recorded 5 Ethiopians, for example, sentenced to death in Yemen, and a Kenyan woman sentenced to death in Vietnam, whose sentence was later commuted to life imprisonment. Although the numbers doesn't feel a lot, this actually shows that when facing drug charges abroad, marginalized groups, including African and people of African descent, are less likely to secure release as well as access to legal representation. And trial fairness is often undermined by language barriers and lack of interpretation. And they raise serious concerns under international law, including violations of the right to life, the right to fair trials, and the prohibition of cruel, inhuman, or degrading punishment. And my own experience in providing legal aid for foreign nationals arrested for drug offenses in Indonesia shows how different the consular assistance provided by some African embassies versus those coming from, let's say, European countries. More often than not, many embassies of African countries are much smaller in size, resulting in less human resources available. This leaves many of their nationals without consular assistance or a proper consular assistance. Not to mention that in some contexts they might not have the political leverage when dealing with Indonesian authorities. And I assume the situation is similar in other countries, especially in Southeast Asia region. And whether we admit it or not, it often resulted in different less favorable treatment of the prisoner, the people imprisoned. It's also important to recognize the global dimension of these issues. Punitive drug control approaches are often exported through international cooperation, funding, and technical assistance. At the same time, reduction in funding for health and harm reduction, especially in African countries, have weakened access to essential services and increased vulnerability to HIV and other harms. Briefing published by HRI with local partners reconstruct the impact of such cuts on essential harm reduction services in several African countries, notably Kenya, Mozambique, Nigeria, South Africa, Tanzania, Uganda, and Zambia. In many such countries, many of these countries, PEPFAR was the main funder of HIV and harm reduction services, together with the Global Fund. As a result of the freeze, dozens of clinics and OAT, NSP, HIV testing and treatment services were forced to close or face disruptions, impacting thousands of people who use drugs and their families. Already marginalized populations now faced higher morbidity and mortality risk and heightened discrimination. In Tanzania, for example, experts warn that at least 30,000 additional HIV-related deaths could occur within 2 years if crisis was not resolved. In Uganda, civil society reported an overdose crisis reported following the withdrawal. The cuts had particularly grave consequences for peer workers, who, despite being the backbone of the response in many cases, they not only lost access to essential services, but also the only source of income. And this reflects a broader pattern in which global policy and funding choices reinforce racialized inequalities. And despite the scale of these impacts, accountability remains limited. There are persistent gaps in independent oversight of law enforcement, in access to remedies for those affected by discrimination, and in the availability of legal aid and reparations. Without meaningful accountability, these patterns are allowed to continue, and in many cases actually intensify. At the same time, the lack of disaggregated data obscures these patterns, limiting accountability and effectively rendering discrimination invisible. A major barrier to properly understanding how drug law enforcement intersects with discrimination against people of African descent is the absence of comprehensive data in many countries. Information on policing, arrest, prosecution, sentencing, incarceration, death in custody, and health outcomes is often not broken down by race, gender, sexual orientation, age, or other relevant characteristics. These gaps is frequently the result of governments either not collecting such data or choosing not to make it publicly available.
That was Ajing Lorasetti, human rights lead at Harm Reduction International, speaking on a panel entitled The Role of Drug Laws in Systemic Racism Against Africans and People of African Descent at All Stages of the Criminal Justice System, from day one of the fifth session of EMLR, the UN's International Independent Expert Mechanism to Advance Racial Justice and Equality in the Context of Law Enforcement. We'll have more highlights from EMLR's fifth session on next week's show. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.